Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the church.
From Jerusalem, the Mormon Channel brings you Mormon Identities, a Latter-day look at the Holy Land, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Welcome to Mormon Identities, a show about Latter-day Saints, who we are, what we believe, and how we live, brought to you on The Mormon Channel, the official station of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I am your host, Eric Huntsman, and this is an episode of our special series, A Latter-day Look at the Holy Land, recorded in Jerusalem. This episode is entitled, Daniel, Victor, and Jared Ludlow, Three Generations of Teaching in the Holy Land. Here in the conference room of the BYU Jerusalem Center are two of those three generations, Victor and Jared Ludlow. Victor Ludlow is a scholar of Isaiah and Judaism. He graduated with high honors from BYU and was a Danforth Fellow at Harvard and Brandeis Universities, where he received a PhD in Near Eastern Studies and Judaic Studies. He has authored numerous articles and books, including Unlocking the Old Testament, Isaiah, Prophet, Seer, and Poet, Principles and Practices of the Restored Gospel, and Unlocking Isaiah in the Book of Mormon. Dr. Ludlow has lived and taught many times in the Holy Land, and he is visiting us now for the first time since his retirement from BYU last year. Vic, it's wonderful to see you again, and thank you for joining us on this episode.
Good to be with you, and it's always good to be here in Jerusalem.
Absolutely. Jared Ludlow received his bachelor's degree from BYU in Near Eastern Studies, his master's degree from the University of California at Berkeley in Biblical Hebrew, and his PhD in Near Eastern Religions from UC Berkeley and the Graduate Theological Union. His primary research interests are in ancient Judaism and early Christianity. Dr. Ludlow, is an associate professor of ancient scripture at BYU Provo, which makes him the third generation of the family to teach religion there. He previously taught religion and history at BYU Hawaii, and he's currently serving here in the BYU Jerusalem Center for the 2011-2012 academic year. Jared, thank you for taking time today to join us for this episode.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Vic and Jared, the three of us are sitting here in Jerusalem in a conference room with floor-to-ceiling windows that open up towards the old city of Jerusalem. It is an October evening towards the end of the Jewish festival of Sukkot, or Tabernacles. Both of you have lived and been here before, more often than I have, but I think that all three of us have a love for this land, for both of its people, and most of all for the history and scriptures that were born here. Many Latter-day Saints have visited or hope to visit here someday, but many more will never have that chance. Still, so much of our faith and religion is focused on what happened here in the Old and New Testaments, and it is people like you, whether teaching or leading tour groups here, more often when you are back home and teaching or writing there, that are able to do so much to make the scriptures come alive. If you do not mind, I would like to use the two of you and the one Ludlow, Daniel Ludlow, who is no longer with us, as examples of how studying about this land enriches our gospel experience. So let's begin by talking about studying the Holy Land, using your father and your grandfather as an example. Vic, tell us a little bit about Daniel Ludlow. That's a name that I know from commentaries, and I've seen it in association with the scriptures and other things. Tell me a little bit about your father's career, how he got into religious education, and more particularly, how he came to love the Holy Land so much.
Well, Dad was an undergraduate student at Utah State Agricultural College, Utah State University today, and got a master's degree there. And then in pursuing his further graduate studies at Columbia and Indiana University, he was basically studying to be an educator and different techniques as far as modern, what at that time were considered modern audiovisual and other means of communication. His plans were to return to Cache Valley and teach there. But Ernest Wilkinson prevailed rather persuasively upon him.
President Wilkinson was president of BYU at that time, right?
That is correct. And he convinced Dad that there would be opportunity not only teaching at BYU, but to be involved in developing future cadre of gospel teachers in the church. And so he decided to go there, where he primarily was teaching Book of Mormon. And I had left home, had gone to Germany on a mission, and he came through on his way to the Holy Land in 1963. He wanted to come over here and take a part of the year to live on an Olpan and learn the Hebrew language.
Now, an Olpan is an intensive kind of Hebrew study center, right, here in Israel?
Yes, and they were geared for people who had no background in Hebrew, an intensive immersion type of a program for learning Hebrew. And he was able to do quite a bit of travel in the land and developed a love for it, I think, from the very beginning. And then as he returned back to BYU and was involved in administrative assignments, he was able to make preparations for the very first BYU semester abroad program, which happened in 1968. By that time, I was married with a young family. In fact, Jared was born during that spring. And Dad and Mom came over with a group of, I think it was about 24 students. And they were gone for 6 months. And while they were gone, my wife and I and our two young boys were in the house and taking care of my younger siblings. I'm the oldest of 9 children. And so we were participating indirectly in supporting that initial semester abroad program. And then sporadically at first and then regularly, semester abroad programs started to be offered, and different faculty would take the opportunity to come and travel. He did a couple of other times. I started in 1976 with my first semester abroad program. He was also a close friend with Robert Taylor, who wanted to have LDS groups come here. And so started some of these BYU travel study programs to the Holy Land. And then a third outreach program were a series of workshops for church education system instructors at seminary and institute level who would do a lot of preparation and come here, often with their wives, for a 6 to 8 week experience in the Holy Land and in neighboring biblical countries. So for many years, for almost 30 years, why it seems like coming to the Holy Land was a regular occasion in his life. And I didn't come until 73 and then have had opportunities again, usually at least once, sometimes twice a year, to visit the Holy Land.
Well, we'll come back and talk about your experiences coming here, Vic. And I may ask you another question or two about those first experiences of your father. But if I picked up the pattern here, he came first to help his own study and understanding of the Scriptures in the Holy Land. Then he came to bring students and taught here. But that last one was interesting to me. He came here to help other people teach more effectively. And I think those are the same three goals that we have as we teach here now. Jared, let's talk about Daniel a little bit more. Can you share a memory or two of your grandfather that represent his influence on you? And it doesn't need to be about the Holy Land or even about the Scriptures. Just how did your grandfather influence you in very broad terms?
One of my early memories of him was when he lived up in Salt Lake and seemed to always be carrying briefcases around. In fact, I think I've heard that one briefcase was like his inbox and the other was like his outbox. And so he would just be shuffling manuscripts and papers and things from one to the other. And I've even confirmed this with some of my cousins, but it seemed like initially he wasn't as warm and friendly as he was later in life. And I think maybe he just was a little wrapped up in work and busy with everything. But at some point, and I'm not exactly sure when it was, maybe it was he was called to be a mission president for a couple of years. And it seems like after that, he was such a warm, welcoming grandfather. Anytime we dropped by to visit, he just would drop anything he was doing and welcome us into his home and visit with us, and just very enjoyable. And I always, whenever I had an opportunity, would love to hear him teach. I remember going to some Education Week lectures that he'd give and listening to him there. For a number of years, he was a gospel doctrine teacher in my in-law's ward. And so whenever we'd visit my in-laws, I'd be able to listen to him there, gospel doctrine. And he truly was a wonderful teacher that just made anything seem very interesting and had a lot of insights.
Of course, when you were a boy, he was just grandpa. When did you come to realize what a significant contribution he was making to BYU and to the church, not just through his teaching, but through his writing?
I think maybe there's a couple of areas where I started really noticing an influence, and one would be more just on a personal level. When I'd be introduced or something, the typical next question was, well, are you related to Daniel Ludlow? And I'd say, yes, he's my grandfather. And it was just interesting to see such an influence that he had on so many people through his writings and his teachings. I think the other occasion was when he was called to be the editor of the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, and what a big undertaking and significant project I think that was. And to see all the work that went into that and to hear him share some of his experiences with, I think he said he read every manuscript for that at least twice during the project. And I thought if I could only retain, 10% of what's in the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, I'd be, so much smarter. And so just a lot of amazing work that he did. And I know one of his greatest desires was actually to go teach at BYU Hawaii, where I was privileged to teach for 6 years and to retire there. But the brethren needed him to work on other projects and called him back to Salt Lake. And that's another area where I think I saw, how valuable he was, that the brethren frequently called on him to help
some historical background or to study the scriptures. Yeah. Wonderful. Vic, you were talking about the different kind of phases your father's involvement with the Holy Land went through. But I want to go back to that first experience when he first came here. Jared actually shared with a few of us a document that your father had written, kind of a personal history about his love for the Holy Land. And it was a sabbatical year he came, but it came at some personal sacrifice. If I remember correctly, he could either have half a year at full pay or a whole year at half pay. And he had to do a lot of things to put his finances in order and to make this. What do you think drove him to want to come here so much, and then to spend the time in the Ulpan learning a hard language?
That's a good question. I think it was partially because here he was at BYU in the Department of Ancient Scriptures, and yet he had not had any formal training in Hebrew or Greek, the primary languages of the Bible, or of ancient history, particularly of the Middle East, that would form the background for your Bible studies. And yet, among some of the colleagues, you'd have faculty members like Hugh Nibley and others that were renowned with this academic preparation that they had done. And I think he kind of felt like he was coming into a new arena where he didn't feel as well prepared. And I know that was one of the reasons he wanted to come here, to at least never to become a great linguist, a great historian, but at least to have a good, solid, fundamental background with enough of the language, historical, archaeological, and other areas that he could read and understand the literature and feel comfortable in talking about some of those related issues when teaching the scriptures.
Well, I think that's really impressive about him because, some people feel like, well, I didn't get a degree in this or I didn't study this when I was young. And to even be in your career and say, hey, I'm going to learn some more or I'm going to apply myself in a new way, I think that's a wonderful example for people. We're never too old to want to know the scriptures better. And as Elder McConkie used to say, you don't have to know the languages and the history to understand the basic saving doctrines, but it certainly deepens our appreciation for them. I want to hear a little bit about how you got interested in biblical studies, Vic. I mean, obviously you had the example of your father, but you said just married, weren't you, when he came over here one of those times? So, I mean, you were kind of on your way into your own education and career, weren't you?
That's right. By that time, I had decided I did want to go into teaching. Originally, like in high school and when I was in the military for a short time before going on my mission, I had planned to go into the physical sciences because math and science were always my personal greatest interest. But when in the military, I had an opportunity to be involved in a couple of teaching opportunities at some special courses and schools at Fort Ord, California. And I, even though it was not a very academic environment in an Army boot camp setting, I enjoyed the teaching and the response I got and what learning I could see come in the lives of some of these people that had barely graduated from high school, and barely by not just in time but in credentials. And I just felt like teaching would be a rewarding career more than maybe being a scientist. And as I looked at different options, I felt like what I needed to prepare myself to do was to be a teacher of religion, particularly of ancient scriptures. And I, with a confirmation of the Spirit and the support of my wife later on, why I pursued that. But from the time I made that decision till the time I actually entered in the first classroom as a teacher at BYU, it was 11 years. There was a 2.5-year mission, my undergraduate years, my graduate years. So basically it was 11 years of preparing to come here. And during those 11 years, particularly on a graduate level, I had always had wished I'd had an opportunity to come here, but wasn't able to do it, mainly because we were raising a family and just didn't have the finances. But that was my background. And then finally, after starting my career at BYU, about a year and a half later, was able to have my first opportunity to visit the Holy Land.
Jared, what about you? How did you come to biblical studies and teaching at BYU, and how does it feel to follow in the footsteps of your father and your grandfather?
Well, by the time I started my undergraduate at BYU, I had lived about 6 years outside of the United States, and so I really had kind of international feelings and interest. And so I actually started BYU thinking I was going to do something like international business or something like that. But after a semester or two there, I just realized what I really loved studying and always wanted to learn more about was the Bible and the ancient Near East. And so I changed my major to Near Eastern Studies and continued to pursue that, and was fortunate enough to be able to get into a graduate program to continue studying. And once I finished my PhD, I had the opportunity to get a job at BYU Hawaii and really loved and enjoyed the opportunity to teach there and the diversity of the student body. And even though there weren't many colleagues that had the same academic background as I did, because we were very small, it was still a very wonderful teaching experience. But then coming to BYU Provo has been very nice because more colleagues study similar things, and so we're able to share a lot more.
I've often wondered, though, if it were a little intimidating. I mean, at BYU Hawaii, you were kind of your own man doing your own thing, but your grandfather and your father had taught at BYU Provo. Was it a little intimidating? Did you feel like you had to measure up? Or
it is a little bit. It was kind of nice to be at BYU Hawaii because I was a little more separate there. You're right on there. But coming to BYU Provo, in some ways, I try not to think about it. I'm not trying to, necessarily fill their footsteps because they've done wonderful things. But it's been great to have them as resources. Before my grandfather passed, I could ask him questions, and I'm still able to ask my dad questions. And so that's, I think, been the greatest thing about following into their footsteps. And also inheriting some of their books has been nice, too.
Well, all three of you have loved this land and the scriptures and the history. You've studied it yourself, and that has enabled you to help other Latter-day Saints study it. So after our station identification break, I want to turn to that idea of Latter-day Saints studying here in the Holy Land. You're listening to Mormon Identities on the Mormon Channel, the official station of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Today, we're talking about the Ludlows, three generations of teaching in the Holy Land. Vic, you've mentioned a little bit about how your father was involved in the first, I think they called them travel study programs at that point. Talk a little bit about those first student and faculty travel study trips. Your father came here to further his own understanding and education, but then he led one of those first travel study groups, and then you mentioned he brought faculty here and seminary institute personnel. They're not like they are now. We're sitting here in a beautiful, beautiful center with many facilities, and the students have all these opportunities, and we can look out our windows at the Holy Land and the ancient city, the old city here in Jerusalem, but that's not the way it was the first time your father brought a group here, or even the first times you brought a group here.
That is true. First of all, there was just one faculty member, and so you had all the coursework that you had to prepare for and teach, plus you were the program manager as far as arranging facilities both for living and for field trips, scheduling buses, paying bills, and being the branch president and everything for the group. And because of limited finances, why quite often as part of the program there were different ways of almost working as you go. Opportunities that are available. The kibbutzim, these communal settlements here in Israel, often have volunteer workers who come here. They usually are there for a year, at least 6 months, and in exchange for work, they receive room and board and a little bit of a living allowance. Well, what we were able to arrange, and Dad started it, was to make arrangements with some of these kibbutzim where the students would come and work maybe part of the day, and then they would have time for classes later in the day. And so they'd stay at a kibbutz for three, maybe 4 weeks, and then that way it didn't cost the students anything so that they would be able to get by on the limited budget that they had available. But now the students are here for a full-time academic program with intensive field trips, and it's a much better academic and social environment, but it does cost a lot more, and so that does cause some challenges, but thankfully, due to support of some generous donors, we're able to help more of these students so that they can still have the opportunity for an intensive learning experience. But those first ones were pioneer in more ways than one. The accommodations were often at youth hostel, YMCA type facilities with dorm rooms and rather Spartan accommodations and food. And then I would say at least second, third class type hotels that they would work out arrangements. But as you would stay at these hotels, there would be certain times of the year during the high tourist season, like at Easter and Passover in the spring and the fall Jewish holidays, that they would want you out of the hotels because that's when there would be plenty of visitors to the Holy Land and they could make a lot more money off of them than they would the meager rates the students were paying. And so you'd have to find another place to live during that period of time. And rather old buses and drivers that you weren't always sure were going to get you safely there and back. And it was an adventure. Now, one advantage to it that I don't think our students experience now is it gave you a sense of camaraderie and sharing of challenges and making sacrifices and
working on the banana plantation at the kibbutzim and
working at the banana plantation and you're harvesting bananas and there's snakes and spiders and it's dirty, it's muddy, it's grungy work, but when you're done, like when you're working at Degania Aleph along the southern shore of the Sea of Galilee where the Jordan River comes out, then to finish your work in the morning and then go down to the river and grab hold of that rope swing and swing out into the Jordan River and cool off and freshen up. Those are things they'll never forget.
Yeah. And now, of course, you said they have a well-honed system for those who are doing the BYU study abroad programs. But you mentioned that your father, and I suppose you have been involved in helping church educational system personnel come, and a lot of times they're supported that they can study. But we also now have a lot of LDS tour groups that come. People who aren't coming as younger students, but as adults, oftentimes older in their lives. It's a life dream. I know my mother's anxious to visit me here over the Christmas holidays. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And, of course, they can't do the intense study and the archaeological site visits that we can do in a semester. But for a lot of people, a week or 2 weeks in the Holy Land makes a difference in how they'll look at the Scriptures, doesn't it?
It certainly does. In fact, the common reaction is, and I warn them this in advance, I don't care how serious they were in their Scripture studies and how often they may have read the Bible, even after just a week and a half here in the land, when they return home and read the Bible again, it will be a new book because they will have such a different frame of reference to put the events and stories and teachings of the ancient prophets, the saviors he traveled and fulfilled his ministry here, and as the early apostles were involved in this land.
Well, and I would add even the Book of Mormon. Just recently we were down towards the Negev, and I was imagining Lehi and his family walking back and forth and back and forth, and it helps you kind of understand the culture out of which the Book of Mormon emerged, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I personally feel like a better understanding of this area of the world helps you appreciate the Book of Mormon than if you were, say, a Mesoamerican historian or archaeologist, because their culture, their language, all of that they brought with them as they traveled to America, and that set the stage and the context for their writing style, for their imagery that is so dominant. It's a Middle Eastern culture that you see coming forth in the pages of the Book of Mormon.
Now, Jared, your experience in the Holy Land was very different the first couple times you came. You didn't come as a BYU student on a study abroad program. You didn't come as a seminary institute instructor coming for training. And you certainly didn't come as a retired person on a luxury kind of week tour. You came as, what, a second grader and an eighth grader the first two times your family came here. What was it like to be a child living here?
I honestly just have good memories of it. I'm sure it wasn't perfect, but it just, what I remember, just some wonderful experiences. And I think part of that is going to the places related to the Scriptures, and especially the life of Jesus, and feeling the spirit of those places. But I think also being around the students as a young child, it's just such a wonderful opportunity to have all these older brothers and sisters. Like my daughter prayed the other night that how grateful she was for her 60 sisters, and I was kind of taken aback by that. But they just often treat the faculty kids so well that it's just a wonderful experience. And I think you feel more mature than you are in your years mm-hmm. through associating with that.
And I think it builds a love of and understanding of the Scriptures so early. If I can just mention the experience my family's having, I have a daughter who's taken seminary from your wife. Your wife is our seminary teacher, and they had been talking about the book of Genesis, and we took your son Josh and my daughter Rachel to Beersheba to talk about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and she just read those passages. And I had an experience just the other day that one of the most powerful personal experiences I've had, I had a group of students, but one of them included my 14-year-old daughter, and we were at the Pool of Siloam talking about John chapter 8 and the Savior healing the man born blind. And I've loved that passage and taught it for years, but to stand on the spot where it happened and be able to bear testimony to my students and to my daughter that Jesus really did that, it's something I'll treasure. I really will. Now, you did come as a student, and you mentioned earlier it was when you were engaged, I think. I think you left your fiancé and came to Israel. But how did the experience as a college student, really studying intensely the program as we have it set up now, perhaps change you, Jared?
I think, I mean, obviously it laid a good foundation for my future career. I mean, it really solidified that this was what I wanted to do and study. And I think, again, just the opportunity to immerse myself back in the scriptures and to have the experiences with the scriptures and the sites. And, you know, you can't always predict when these experiences will come. You can visit 10 sites and maybe only one of them is really meaningful, but you have those experiences and it just deepens your love for and understanding of not only the scriptures, but what happened there and the reality of what happened there.
Well, it's an interesting thing because we talk a lot about the value of coming here and studying the scriptures in or near the locations where they occurred and how important that is. And yet, there are times when we don't know exactly where an event happened. And, you know, we'll go to the Garden Tomb, for instance, and some prophets have felt very strongly there. But there are questions as to whether that's exactly where it happened. And a lot of times we're forced to realize it's not really important where it happened, it's that it happened. In fact, we had a very moving experience in Branch Meeting the other week where a young man, 8-10 years old, bore his testimony and said, it doesn't matter where things happen, it mattered that they happened. And yet that young boy learned that here. Since so many of our listeners may not have a chance to come here, I'd like the two of you, as we start to close this episode, talk about how living and teaching and studying the scriptures here in the Holy Land has changed the way you study them and teach them at home. And what is it that people who can't come here can still learn about the scriptures if they'll try to study a little bit of the history and the culture, even sitting in Minneapolis or London or Orem, Utah? Vic, talk to us a little bit about that. How has your experience living and teaching the scriptures here affected the way you study them, first of all, and then second, how you teach them, whether it be an Isaiah class at BYU or a gospel doctrine class in your home ward?
Well, it's interesting to be here as a teacher, and you're looking at your students, and you're trying to determine how would this experience help them, not only in their understanding of their scriptures, but in their testimony of the gospel and in their commitment to the gospel. And you want that to be a well-rounded program to challenge them intellectually, but you realize there's something more important than just giving them knowledge. From the very beginning, we've had the idea that we wanted more and more people to be exposed to this kind of opportunity. So starting with a couple of dozen students, then the first program I came over with, we had 44 students, and then the next time it was like 80 students, and then it was 160 students. We were always looking for ways to justify expanding the program so we could get more and more people involved. So that might mean living with your family in an apartment, some other part of the city, so that you could fill up whatever the hotel or other facilities were and need to live somewhere else. And so you could say, well, we need a bigger facility. We need a bigger facility. And ultimately, we were able to have this center here to provide the whole program. And as I was looking at ways I could help others to become better students of the Scriptures. I've had some of them that have carried on and have become professional teachers, seminary teachers in the church education system. But most of them, teaching will be a calling, not a profession, especially of the Scriptures. But as I've seen how I've tried to help them be better prepared for whatever teaching opportunities they might do, it's given me perspective of, well, how can I take this material myself back? Because most of my career I'm teaching at the Provo campus. It's only maybe once or so a decade that I'm here teaching. So the majority of my time is back there in the Provo campus, and most of those students are not going to have the opportunity to come here. So how can I bring an excitement about the Scriptures, insights about the Scriptures, hopefully a love for the Scriptures, along with the intellectual understanding of the Scriptures, so that they feel like the Scriptures are really a valuable resource that they can use in their own personal lives? And there's no doubt about it, it's made me a better teacher, and I hope a better person.
Jared, you were here, as we mentioned, as a family faculty member, as a child of a faculty member. Then you came as a student, but now you and I are here doing something different. We are on the teaching end of it. How is it different teaching here than your previous experience? And what are you learning that's different? How is it changing you to be on the other side of the classroom?
Well, I'm certain that one thing I didn't appreciate as a student or as a child is the challenges and all the work that goes into making the program successful. As a student, you just show up on the bus and you go on the field trips and you're taught and you find some things that are interesting and so forth. But to now be on the end of having to find out what can be insightful for students and figuring out the best way to approach that material and teach that material, and all the work that goes into arranging and shepherding the students along and so forth, has been kind of eye-opening. But I'm just learning again. You know, it just never hurts to get back into the Scriptures and learn more about the context around them and be reminded of some stories that I maybe had read before but just never really hit me. But now having some aha experiences with those stories and realizing, you know, like, for example, when we went through Turkey and realizing how much of a sacrifice it was for Paul to travel throughout this region and to preach. And
he wasn't on a bus or a plane. He was walking or on a boat.
And he's trying to nurture these very young church leaders, and then he knows and they know that they're going to be separated and apart, and what a feeling that must have been for them, you know, knowing that they weren't going to be together again. And so it just gives, you know, again, a greater appreciation for some of the accounts in the Scriptures.
You know, I've thought about this a bit, because when we are in a classroom, particularly in this day and age with the technology and the PowerPoint and the screens and the images, we do all these things to try to make the Scriptures come alive. But what I've learned is I can stand on a tell, an archaeological mound here, with nothing but the Scriptures in one hand and a hymn book in the other, and my testimony. You know, it's interesting. I had to come halfway around the world to learn how to be a better teacher, to just rely on the Scriptures and what they're telling us rather than the bells and the whistles and all the teaching techniques. Well, we need to close here, but I'd like to have a final word from each of you about what members of the church can do to better understand the Bible, keeping in mind that most of them will never come here. And so it doesn't have to be Holy Land specific. Vic, what would you suggest people do to better understand the Old and the New Testaments, and by extension, all the standard works?
The simple answer that I would give is use your resources. Early in my career at BYU, I was invited to be involved with this project of preparing a new edition of the Scriptures that came forth about 30 years ago. And Elder Packer particularly has often emphasized this new set of Scriptures. And yet I still have some people in my gospel doctrine class, fine sisters and brethren, well seasoned in life, who are still using the scriptures that they were using 40, 50 years ago. And here's this marvelous new edition of the scriptures with the topical guide and the Bible dictionary and maps.
And there are maps and pictures of these places that they may never come, but they can still see them and start to put things together.
But also the church with its television and resources such as this program are providing additional opportunities for Latter-day Saints to connect with the scriptures and the gospel. I was recently involved as an advisor at the new movie set that the BYU and the church have prepared there in southern Utah Valley. So instead of having to bring film crews over here to film a series on the New Testament, it's there. They can do it there. Well, those are going to be available to the Latter-day Saints, but it's really not going to bless their lives if they don't use those resources. And it starts with reading the scriptures, but to better understand them, there are wonderful resources throughout every page, especially in the footnotes and the back of the scriptures, and now as produced by the church, that if those resources are used regularly and we just get in the habit of turning to them and using them, then the scriptures will come more alive and they'll speak more directly to us.
Thank you, Jared.
Well, I'd say obviously it has to start with immersing oneself in the scriptures and approaching them not, you know, as the checklist, I need to read my two chapters today or whatever, but to really try to understand a passage, a story, an event. And I think for that, for lack of a better word, visualization, just trying to imagine and think what it would have been like to be at the Sermon on the Mount and to hear the Savior's teachings from there, or to witness a healing done by a prophet or by Jesus or one of the apostles. We sometimes pass over all these miracles so quickly that we don't appreciate what it must have meant for each individual to have that brief but life-changing encounter with a prophet or apostle or the Savior himself, and that to just have their life completely changed through that brief encounter. And, you know, I've noticed even going to some of these sites, like, for example, Jericho, all you see now is this mound of rocks and mud, and you still have to visualize what it might have looked like and what it might have been like during the time of Joshua, for example, or Elisha. And so I think any reader of the scriptures can visualize and try to deepen their understanding of the scriptures through that process, whether they're here or elsewhere.
Well, you've both used that expression, either visualize or make the scriptures come alive. I guess the thing that's been coming to my mind as you've been talking is the scriptures and the people and events they talk about need to be real. And for some of us who have the need or the opportunity to come here to the places, to feel the geography, to walk where Jesus walked, or more often walk above where Jesus walked, that helps it become more real. But I want to close with what Jesus said to Thomas in John 20. Blessed are you that you believe, but even more blessed are those who don't see and they believe. And so I think you both ended by giving us some really important guidelines. Immerse ourselves in whatever resources or opportunities we do have and use those tools and use the scriptures and let the Spirit fill in the gaps. Let the Spirit create in your mind an image of these events and these places, because the Spirit will always tell us that the stories in the scriptures are true. Vic and Jared, thank you so much for joining us. And audience, thank you for listening to this episode of Mormon Identities, where we've been talking about teaching in the Holy Land on this special series, A Latter-day Look at the Holy Land of Mormon Identities, reminding you to remember who you are, what you believe, and how we live as Latter-day Saints. Until next time, remember that today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad.
Thank you for joining us on this special series, Mormon Identities, a Latter-day Look at the Holy Land, on the Mormon Channel, presented by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.